welcome to The Sector, the radio show podcast discussing nonprofits, social justice, and activism. With me, your host, Ethan Clow, broadcasting live here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Happy Friday. The end of the week is here. Hopefully you have had a productive work week. You may have noticed that last week we re-aired classic episode number 2 of The Sector, featuring an interview with Siobhan Aspinall on fundraising. So I hope that you enjoyed that episode, and if you missed it, feel free to visit us online at our webpage at sectorpodcast.wordpress.com, and you can download the podcast and get all caught up on The Sector. Today we have a fantastic show. We're going to be diving into the interesting question of engagement, and that, in fact, was the big question of the week last time on the show. So what is engagement? How do we, the public, get engaged on a charity or a nonprofit with their mission, their cause, and how do we become so engaged, so fascinated, so involved that we become donors, that we become volunteers, and that ultimately we become an important aspect of that organization? So we'll get to your feedback on engagement, and we'll also discuss sort of the industry standard on it. Exactly what is it? And again, can we define this term? Later in the show, we're going to go on to perhaps a bit of a scary topic, and that is the advocacy chill. So you may have heard recently that our current government, the Harper government of Canada, has been spearheading a number of charity crackdowns, investigating, auditing charities that devote too much effort into political activity, as well as the recent anti-spam legislation. We talked about that on a previous episode. Very hard-hitting. In fact, it's hit the nonprofit sector quite to extreme degree. And I guess some people have asked themselves, is this a bit overkill? Is this a bit too much? So it's raised the question, you know, is our government a little bit anti-charity? And how are charities and nonprofits sort of navigating this interesting new political dilemma? So we'll dive into that as well here on The Sector. And again, if you want to participate in the big question, or if you have any commentary or discussion points you'd like to raise with us, please do. We're on Twitter at Sector Podcast, as well as on Facebook, facebook.com/sectorpodcast. And you can email us at sectorpodcast@gmail.com. Well, let's just take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll dive into the big question of the week.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, RX Comics, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, the Rumpus Room, the Wallflower Modern Diner, and Woo Vintage Clothing.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus, or go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure.
A long time ago, in a city far, far away,
CITR
was born. In the decade ahead, America will be in space.
CITR
is already there. Astronaut Neil Armstrong had this to say about
CITR.
That's one small step for man.
So vote.
CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Herbert R. Tarlick, Chairman.
And we're back here on The Sector on CITR with me, Ethan Clow, your host. Well, let's discuss the big question of the week. The Big Question is where I pose a provocative question to you, our listener, and invite your feedback. And let's take a look at that big question that I discussed last time on the show in episode 14. What do you think about engagement? And again, engagement in terms of outreach, of reaching out to a population of people, a community, a customer or donors, and making them involved with an organization, engaging them on a cause or a mission, and ultimately connecting them to a charity or a nonprofit. What are some of the ways that a nonprofit has engaged with you? Well, in looking at your feedback, it's interesting. A lot of you have mentioned that social media plays a major role in how you stay engaged with a nonprofit. Whether it's Twitter or Facebook, or maybe a different form of social media, it's usually the method of choice for getting sort of up-to-date, day-to-day information on what's going on and what kind of stories, what kind of news items are making the rounds. And that helps us stay informed. It helps us keep abreast of what the organization is doing. And sometimes it may, in fact, push us to donate. Now, social media and this sort of engagement in general kind of has a bit of a negative connotation. We've all heard terms like slacktivism before. And this notion of connecting to a charity via social media and engaging, capital E engaging, by following news stories, following updates, has actually been criticized as basically being unproductive. Unless you're putting a dollar to your engagement, or you're physically, practically, in some way making a difference yourself, some people view that as the only real form of engagement. Now, that's a bit of a contentious point, and personally, I don't buy that. I think that if you are following your charity or cause or mission of choice, and if you are engaging, as in you are interacting, you're sharing content, you're engaging in discussions about that content, by all intents and purposes, that is engagement. And you can't really blame this generation for using the tools of disposal to engage on topics that interest them. There was a time when, sure, you would go down to the local coffee shop with your newspaper and discuss the events that are happening in the world, and then you would go and, you know, storm a armory and occupy the king's tennis court. But those days are somewhat in the past. Nowadays, this kind of discussion is happening on Facebook or on Twitter. It's happening in an online community. Less often is it happening in a physical community where you're discussing face-to-face with somebody the important aspects of the charity that you are advocating for. So that's online engagement. And again, from your feedback, I would say that most of you, this is your method of choice. This is how you seek out the charities that you want to engage with, and ultimately how they seek you out. If you're interested in human rights and civil liberties, you're going to find the Amnesty International's or the BC Civil Liberties Association. You're going to find these organizations on your own. And they're also going to find you because their content is getting shared, their content is getting retweeted, it's getting posted about, discussed. So organically, you will gravitate towards the causes that you feel most passionate about. Now, the interesting question, of course, is what is the return on investment? Because we all know that with social media, there actually can be a pretty big risk. If the person who's running your Twitter account or your Facebook account happens to post something that's a bit controversial or a bit offensive or just not on target, it can come back and bite you. So these organizations, you know, they actually have to consider, not only may there not be a return on investment, there actually may be a significant cost to the whole attempt at online engagement. Okay, so let's just take as a given that engagement is almost interchangeable with a social media presence. Because for all intents and purposes, it is. Whether a nonprofit or a charity is attempting to fundraise or find volunteers or just get the message out there, social media realistically has to be part of that conversation. I believe the recent figures are something like 97% of all charities are on Facebook. I believe it's like 95 are on Twitter, and maybe even 96 are on YouTube. So the vast majority of the nonprofit sector is taking social media very seriously. Which is not to say that we're minimizing the importance of email, direct mail, face-to-face conversation, phone calls, and that more personal level of interaction. Or maybe we are. What do you think? Are we perhaps underestimating that level of importance, that level of connection? That's a debate to have perhaps at a later point. But again, let's, for the sake of argument, let's say that, okay, social media, that's here to stay. Social media engagement, here to stay, not going anywhere. So then, ultimately, how do we quantify engagement? Because it's great to get retweets and shares and likes and comments. What does that amount to? At the end of the day, when you go in to pitch your engagement project to your board of directors or whoever, and they say, okay, well, that's great. We're going to spend X amount of dollars on this. We're going to hire a social media advisor. What do we get out of it at the end of the day? So what is engagement then? Like, how do you define that term? And maybe it is a meaningless term. Maybe it's simply a marketing buzzword. Now, personally, I would say that it's not. My gut instinct is that engagement certainly can be a buzzword. I mean, anything can be a buzzword in the nonprofit sector. It's very possible to sort of spin these terms into things that they're not, like synergy and energy and interconnected, blah, blah, blah. But engagement is all about taking action. It's about getting involved in a cause. And the involvement is dependent on what the cause is. If your organization is asking me to share something because each share earns a donation, that can be engagement. If you're asking me to sign a petition or show up at a given time so that I can attend a protest or a rally or a demonstration, again, that's all engagement. And engagement doesn't have to be an all or nothing approach. Why would we assume that it has to be you're either a card-carrying member or you're just a slacktivist? Engagement most likely and should be a process, a step-by-step movement through a progression of involvement. It would be pretty silly that assuming you get 10,000 Twitter followers that you now have 10,000 donors. But maybe one day you'll be able to transition some of those followers into donors. Maybe someday they will go from beyond retweeting, reposting, to attending rallies, to volunteering, to demonstrations. That is the progression of engagement. And that's really what it is. It's a process. It's not necessarily going to be an end goal system. It is, we are setting up a way for that, our followers, our community, to interact, to become more dedicated to the cause, to learn more, to become more educated. And ultimately, that process will make them better advocates, make them better activists, and hopefully transition them into donors and supporters. One of the best ways to think about engagement is retention. General marketing, whether that be in the for-profit or the nonprofit sector, is all about acquisition. It's about bringing in new people into the fold, whether they become donors or even just, you know, Facebook sharers. Whatever their classification is, marketing lets us bring new people into the fold. But engagement is what we use to retain these people. Now, whether they're donors or, again, Facebook sharers, engagement keeps them there. If you like a Facebook page and there's no content or not a steady stream of content, or the content is boring or stupid or it's not related to the cause, you're not going to stay involved. If you donate once to a charity And we've all done it. We've all donated once or twice just because, you know, the mood strikes us or we think we found something that we like. And there's no follow-up. There's no thank you. There's no stewardship. There's no attempt to even retain you as a donor. Well, you know, you're going to forget about them and move on to some other charity that values your time. And to shift gears and use a for-profit example, if you're a customer of a particular brand or tool or whatever, let's just say that we're talking about computers or tablets or phones. If you don't feel engaged on your product, if you don't feel that your product is speaking for you and speaking to the persona that you want to have, you're not going to keep using it. Anyone out there who's ever had an iPod or an iPhone and switched to Android or Windows knows what I'm talking about, and vice versa. If you're using a product for a very specific reason, because of a very specific outreach campaign or outreach method, then if that shifts, if it changes tone, you're no longer going to be engaged. Now, unless they find a way to bring you along with that process. And again, that is what good engagement does. If you're going to shift the focus of your charity, if you're going to shift the focus of your mission cause, you need to have engagement to bridge that gap. You need to explain to your donors and supporters why we're shifting our priorities or why we're widening our tent or narrowing our focus. Because that's going to help them stay involved and stay aware and understand why you're doing what you do. Now, this ties into, I guess, the final point that I'd like to make about engagement, and that is a measurable objective. In the nonprofit sector, you're often exposed to what I mentioned before, marketing buzzwords that don't really have any kind of meaning. They're given meaning because you hear them in presentations and on PowerPoints and in TED Talks, but there's no real solid basis to understand what they're talking about when they say synergy or energy or interconnectedness. I don't know, some weird term like that. Now, with engagement, again, and it can be a buzzword, we can use engagement as this kind of quick fix solution that has no real substance. The way to counter that is to make sure that whatever we're talking about in terms of engagement, it's actually tied to something. There's an objective. There is a reason why we're creating a Facebook page or a Twitter account. We want to raise awareness. We want to make people aware of our events and activities. We want to start hosting demonstrations and protests. Or we want to spread the news about a particular project or campaign that we're working on. We also want to build a foundation of trust. We want a public persona that people can look at. I mean, think about all the different marketing faux pas that have happened over the last couple of years. One of the ways that we get information about these sort of things is through the official Twitter accounts of these organizations. Or in some cases, corporations, brands, some kind of problem happens. And oftentimes, instead of bothering phoning up a PR person, we go to their Twitter feed and see what is being presented to their consumers. And this is a really interesting point because the for-profit and the nonprofit sector have often been on weird, bizarre, parallel tracks. And one of the rallying cries for many nonprofit activists is that we need to start taking more of a page from the for-profit sector. And if you look at the for-profit sector, they have jumped on the social media bandwagon. I'm always kind of surprised when I see that big corporations have 5,000, 10,000, hundreds of thousands of followers on Twitter and Facebook. Because, I mean, like, who wants to put yourself in the firing range of more marketing? But people do. And it's actually a pretty useful tool. It's not just about them sharing information about the latest deal or the latest sale that they're having. They actually can use this to interact with their customers. They can use this to communicate problems. So for example, if you're a cable service provider, you can use it to communicate about service outages. If, for instance, maybe you are a transit provider like TransLink, and you have two system-wide malfunctions in like the span of a week, the way that TransLink did, You can use Twitter and Facebook to get across the message that you are working on a solution and you will have one soon. So it does serve a major purpose for the for-profit sector. Why shouldn't it, therefore, also serve a purpose for the nonprofit sector? Even if it's not generating donations, even if the engagement level appears superficial, if a major corporation that is worth billions of dollars is going to invest in social media, should that not be at least a bit of a rallying cry to at least investigate the possibilities? And again, of course, most nonprofits have figured that out, and they are using it. So I would love to hear more about engagement and how you engage or not engage on social media or with your nonprofit of choice, your mission, the cause, the things that you are interested in. So keep sending me your feedback again at sectorpodcast.wordpress.com online. You can email us at sectorpodcast@gmail.com, and you can tweet us and follow us on Facebook at sectorpodcast or facebook.com/sectorpodcast. And of course, you can follow me at Ethan Clow on Twitter. Well, let's just take a quick break here on the show, a couple station promos to tell you about, and then we'll be back with more here on The Sector.
Jazz is a word that means many different things to many different people. The best definition of jazz that I know of is the jazz show on CITR with yours truly, Gavin Walker. Monday nights, 9 to midnight, with the jazz feature at 11 o'clock. Check us out every Monday.
Imagined what it would be like to be a wizard, and then I pretended and acted in that way on the day.
Studies show that 9 out of 10 wizards prefer CITR 101.9 FM.
If we were to draw a graph of my process, of my method, something like this, Sir Ian, action, wizard, you shall not pass, cut! Sir Ian.
And we are back here on The Sector on CITR with me, Ethan Clow. And we're talking about the advocacy chill. Brr. So many of you probably have seen in the news the recent story with Pen Canada, a writer's charity, which was hit by an audit by the Canadian Revenue Agency, the CRA. Now, this is not necessarily on its own all that exciting or noteworthy, except that this charity, Pen Canada, among many others, has also been very critical of the Harper government. You can see where this is going. When we see politically active or advocacy-strong charities that are being what appears to be singled out by the CRA, one tends to raise eyebrows and goes, I wonder if there's a connection here between government and the enforcement of charity rules. As reported in media, the audit of Pen Canada is one of more than 50 that the CRA has been involved in since 2012. This has prompted many critics to call this an advocacy chill. A charity that focuses on human rights, the environment, civil liberties, and other sort of progressive values naturally find themselves often criticizing our current government for regressive, draconian, or in some cases just plain wrong policy. Now, this advocacy chill is meant to imply that because these organizations are venturing too far out of their charitable mandate and talking about politics, they are breaking charity law. And that is why these audits happen. because charities are forbidden from spending more than 10% of their resources on political matters. Now, the idea, of course, is that do this enough times, audit enough charities, and you put enough fear into them that they will shut up and stop talking about the government. The wave of audits was announced by the federal government in 2012 during the budget. Some groups who have been under threat of losing their charitable status for several years now, listed targets include Amnesty International Canada, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, Canada Without Poverty, and the David Suzuki Foundation. So the usual suspects of people who would normally criticize the government. And I think that I would say to you, listeners, should they not be criticizing the government? Because I think they should. If you listen to the names of these organizations, Amnesty International, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, Canada Without Poverty, the David Suzuki Foundation, an environmental charity, numerous other organizations like the BC Civil Liberties Association, Insight, Vancouver's Safe Injection Site, many more, have all been critical of the government. Why? Because their policy, their mission statement, their work, their good work, is often countered, endangered, and threatened by our conservative political government. Now, the Canadian Revenue Agency says that the work that it's conducted is without political direction from the government. And I will say, I believe them. Now, the CRA obviously gets funding from the government, but the CRA exists for a very good reason. Because there are people out there, bad people, who will lie and cheat and break the rules, and some of them do work for nonprofits and charities. And these people tarnish the good name and the hard work of everybody else in the sector who is trying to fundraise ethically, who is spending donor money ethically, and is trying to do the right thing. And these bad people tarnish all that hard work. And they should be ashamed of themselves. I have nothing but contempt for people who lie and cheat and steal in the name of charities and nonprofits. So the CRA, they need to exist. They have to investigate these sort of things. And it's a good thing that they do exist, because without the CRA, we would not be able to trust nonprofits and charities. That is the sad truth. I mean, human nature being what it is, there would be people who would take advantage of a situation. They would steal, they would misdirect donor funds, and it happens. That's why so many charities voluntarily go through audits. I mean, they have to go through audits. They have to show to their donor base, they have to show to their board of directors, and they have to show to law enforcement that they are following the rules properly, that they are being good stewards of money. So, you know, we don't need to tar and feather the Canadian Revenue Agency. Now, this is where we put on our tinfoil hats. There is, of course, connections between government and the CRA. There has to be. They get their funding from the government. There are strings. There are things like cronyism. There are problems where you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. This sort of thing happens in politics. It happens with large behemoth organizations like the CRA and government. Sometimes it's very hard to separate the strings, the funding, the connections, and be totally objective. It's human nature. And this isn't a conservative liberal thing. The conservative government does it. The liberals have done it. The NDP have done it. Every political party in some way or another probably engages on this. So that's why we as the public and as donors and supporters and nonprofit activists, we have to be diligent and skeptical and critical thinkers when it comes to political engagement, as well as how a nonprofit operates within the law. Now, keeping that in mind, investigation by the Canadian press, numerous nonprofit organizations, and just the public have found that many of the charities that have been targeted by political activity audits range from environmental to international aid and human rights groups. Many say that these organizations are being slowly drained of cash based on legal and other costs associated with the audit, and are now fearful of speaking out lest they too be targeted by audits. Many of these organizations have been critical of the Harper government, particularly regarding pipelines, oil sands, the closing of environmental research facilities, the overspending on fighter jets. The list goes on and on. Many have been called radical money launderers by senior conservative cabinet ministers. Famously, they were labeled eco-terrorists. The CRA budget is increased to $13 million for these special audits, up from $8 million initially. So there's been a pretty sizable increase in funding to the CRA to investigate these charities. In an article in The Star, the NDP reported as calling out the Revenue Minister, Carrie Lynn Findlay, with regards to this advocacy chill, accusing the government of abusing the CRA in terms of using them to target charities and organizations that don't follow along with the government. Now, I mean, these are serious charges, and of course, we have to be skeptical. I mean, this is the opposition government here, of course, criticizing the Harper government. But nonetheless, I mean, look at what's happened. Look at the information that we have here. And I'm not saying that we should be putting on our tinfoil hats, but at the very least, we need to be aware of the effect these sorts of audits have on the nonprofit sector. Adding fuel to the fire, the NDP also reported that many of these complaints against the charities that provoked the audits were made by oil companies. And given the connection between the Conservative government, the tar sands, the oil pipelines, and the really intense criticism that these projects have generated, that should also raise some red flags. If somebody is lining your pockets, if somebody is being a big contributor to your political campaign, and they're getting criticized, are you not going to do something about it? And again, not to say that we need to put on our tinfoil hats, but I still think that we should be aware of that connection. And again, this isn't just me, a lefty liberal person who has a podcast, complaining. This is actually based on studies. A former journalist and graduate student in communications, Gareth Kerberby, a student at the University of Victoria, actually did some anonymous interviews with charity heads and directors from various organizations, many of whom have been targeted by these audits. And the data suggests that, indeed, this is creating an advocacy chill. It's actually causing nonprofits and charities to reduce their advocacy, to spend more money on bookkeeping and overhead, and not on the cause and the mission, and to be quiet, lest they draw the ire of the government and perhaps lose their charitable status. This toning down was actually seen in things like brochures, on the web, public statements, elsewhere. And definitely there was a sense of caution that was being applied to these charities and what they said. I think it would be wrong of us to assume that there is a clear connection between sort of a evil mustache-twirling Stephen Harper and the advocacy chill that we're seeing in charities. But that being said, it is fair for us as the voters, as the public, as fans of activism, to look at the policy records of the ruling government party and make assumptions about what areas that they emphasize, where they see value and importance, and where they don't. Keeping in mind that this is a government that has been under investigation for voter fraud. With the robocalling, they've had high-ranking members of their party come under review for corruption, like Mike Duffy. They've been involved in controversial efforts to silence scientists. And again, that's not just political rhetoric. That's that really happened. They've been trying to shut down the Experimental Lakes program. They've been champions of the pipeline of oil of the tar sands in Alberta. These are controversial policy decisions that deserve to be questioned, that deserve to have political, social commentary on them. And silencing that conversation is not just anti-democratic, it's criminal. And likewise, if we're talking about the NDP or the Liberals, and we're talking about championing things like harm reduction drug policy or healthcare coverage for abortion services, to pick a controversial topic, these are not insignificant policy changes to Canadian society, and they deserve to be debated. They deserve to be discussed. It would be wrong of them to shut down conversation and say that it's not important. Likewise, it's wrong when anyone does shut down debate, when they close down discussion, and when they say that, no, we're right, you're wrong, get over it. That's not Canada. That's not democracy. While we let that sink in, and while we ruminate on that idea, let's take a quick break here on The Sector, and we'll return in a moment after this.
My address is 2904 Salisbury Street.
I can't understand you. You need to speak English.
Hey, Polly, that remark is totally inappropriate. I know you're new here, but this is a safe harbor office. We're committed to treating all of our clients respectfully.
What would you do if you were this witness? Safe Harbor Respect for All provides diversity workshops across Canada with funding from the Government of Canada. Visit safeharbor.ca. Respect for All. Pass it on.
Class, shut up. Shut up and listen to me right now. This is Fred Schneider, and you're listening to CITR. Shut up and listen to this radio station.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective. News 101 is Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced student and community newscast, bringing you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective. Tune in Mondays and Fridays at 5 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Live streaming and podcasts are available online at citr.ca.
And we are back here on The Sector on CITR with me, Ethan Clow. And we're discussing advocacy chill, the controversial notion that a politically motivated effort to silence charities that are critical of the government is ongoing and is endangering advocacy and activism here in Canada. Now, as I've been sort of mentioning on the show, that there are ways to interpret this. We can see this as a conspiracy theory, or we can see this as a series of unfortunate circumstances brought about by some unfortunate individuals within politics, and then kind of working within the confines of a somewhat flawed system of charity law. And charity law is also at the root of this because, as I mentioned, a charity is not allowed to spend more than 10% of its resources on political activity. And again, to go through that list of things that this current government is doing, supporting the tar sands, supporting a oil pipeline that people don't really want, buying expensive fighter jets, shutting down major scientific research facilities, silencing scientists who work for the government, preventing them from talking about things like climate change, And again, a whole host of pursuing policies and projects that lots of people don't agree with. And again, it is totally fair and within the mission and scope of these organizations to talk about that, to criticize that. And that should be allowed. That's part of having a free and open democracy. Now, charity law, to some extent, actually sort of prevents that by having these rules about what charities can talk about and the risk of them losing their charity status, which is considered the gold standard in Canada of what makes a cause worthy of support. This can have unintended effects of limiting what a charity can talk about. So then maybe it's not a question of the CRA following with Stephen Harper's sort of regime. Maybe it's not even really the fault of the government. Maybe they're just following procedures, perhaps a bit too eagerly, but nevertheless. Maybe it is the law, the procedures itself, that have to change. And that's where the big question of the week comes in. And I want to pose it to you, our listeners. Is it time to reform charity law? As I mentioned, charities are generally forbidden to get too into politics. Maybe that needs to change. Maybe we should allow charities to be more political. Think about it, too, in terms of charities that you don't like. It's easy for us to agree that it'd be wonderful for charities like Insight and environmental foundations to get more political and to get more outspoken and better at outreach and advocacy. That would be great. But what about charities we don't respect? And I mean, not to name names, but maybe charities that don't take a progressive worldview. Maybe charities that advocate for traditional conservative values. Do we want these charities to also be able to become more politically active? And some would even argue that those charities already are very politically active. Some would argue that these charities seem to be passing by unnoticed by the CRA, while environmental charities are getting audited and getting advocacy chilled, whereas charities like Focus on the Family, religious organizations, conservative think tanks, all of these organizations seem to be getting by pretty good, and they're just as politically active. So, listeners, think it over. Let me know what you think on this matter. We have political organizations, we have charities and nonprofits, well, mostly charities, that are forbidden from entering that political arena. And yet, when their cause and mission is political in nature, should they not be allowed to enter that political arena? Should we not have rules that allow for that kind of advocacy? And if we do, then how do we make sure that everybody stays equal and that we don't give preferential treatment to certain charities? And how do we feel about the idea that certain charities that we don't necessarily support, that we don't like, that have controversial messages, now are even more free to be political and donate to the Conservative Party if they want to? So, interesting question. I want to hear from you. You can tweet us at Sector Podcast or tweet me at Ethan Clow. You can email us at sectorpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can download the show notes, the podcast, and leave comments on our blog at sectorpodcast.wordpress.com. Remember, if you have any suggestions on people you would like to see interviewed here on The Sector, be sure to let us know. We're interested in nonprofits, activists, advocacy proponents, and anyone in between. So if you or you know somebody who wants to be on the show, give us a shout, let us know. We'd be happy to engage you on some interesting discussion related to nonprofits, social justice, or activism. Well, we are running out of time here on another episode of The Sector. My thanks for joining us on episode 15 of The Sector. Again, we'll have a new episode next Friday at 8 a.m. here on CITR. I hope that your Friday is going to progress very nicely after today's show, and hopefully the weather stays good. Been a bit kind of rainy, a bit muggy during the week, but you know what? That's okay. Helps with the forest fires, so you know, we'll tough it out. And be sure to join us next week on The Sector, where we will be answering your big question, as well as diving into some new topics related to nonprofits and social justice. My name is Ethan Clow, your host, saying once again, thank you for joining us on The Sector. See you next week.
This is John M. Bennett, and you are listening to CITR FM 101.9 in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Nost rum, pale suit, jeers, d'accord.